Welcome back. Here's where you left off. Spoilers ahead for Expeditionary Force, Book 16, Aftermath, Chapters 33 through 37.
I love Chad. Chad? Chad, the bird brain Chad? Oh my god, you are my new favorite character. Okay. Remember in the last episode we talked about Chad and there's always a Chad, right? And I speculate that Chad will be coming on board and just like helping them. Guess who's right? This guy's. Chad is like one of those guys that like he knows what he's worth. He knows what he did in the past. He knows what he's capable of doing. And he knows that everything in his life is going down the drain, including his ex-wife hating him. Now, he's the man. Chad is the man. What do you think about that, Derek?
I think he's obsessed with his ex-wife, dude. I mean, whenever Joe talked to him about it, his whole motivation was, my ex-wife is going to be obsessed or upset by this, or his entire life focus now is to piss off his ex-wife. I don't know if his life priorities are right here.
Well, put it this way. I have this feeling that if you hate your ex-wife, doesn't matter what species you are, you still hate your ex-wife. So,
true. I'm with you on that. It was just, it even threw Joe, he's like, okay.
Yeah, it threw everyone off the ground.
Save the universe or piss off your ex-wife. Save the universe or piss, you know. So it's just that question of where does your priorities lie, Chad?
Exactly. Well, it's kind of funny though because this whole last five chapters we're reading, it was a lot of, in my personal opinion, there was a lot of like character twists, a lot of characters sort of a feel of like, hey, I felt like that there's more humanity in some of the characters, especially in the last five chapters here, because when they introduced Chad regarding he accidentally made the material in the same time that he was just literally, he's a hippie. He's literally a bird brain hippie named Chad. How ironic is that? And he was like camping. And they kidnapped, they literally kidnapped the guy and told him, hey, I need you to redo this again. And it was like, well, everything's by accident. So it's literally like, and after it became a theme throughout this, throughout 33 to 37, and everything was by accident.
He viewed it as the downside of his life.
Yes.
His life's work.
Yes. And it was an accident too, by the way.
Yeah, but he viewed it as an utter failure that led to apparently him hating his ex-wife and all of that stuff happening. And this was his redemption moment, and that's why he was so excited, because he's going to shove it in everybody's faces. Oh, look what I created that no one else has in the entire universe, including the kitties, which he was tickled pink about sticking it to them,
which was kind of
really fun. But my other question is about this, is that every species has tacos or some form of tacos. And my question to you is, wasn't there in some one of the previous books a discussion about Swedish meatballs?
Yes, you're right. There is some type of meatball conversation.
Yeah,
every species has their own version of a meatball.
I think it was, I don't remember what book it was from, but it was interesting because I was thinking tacos. Well, that tacos actually makes a lot of sense to me. Swedish meatballs doesn't really make as much sense.
Yeah,
and I'm just trying to remember if that was actually the book.
Yeah, you do have a point there, because every single culture in the world actually has their version of a taco. That's a matter of what kind it is.
Here's my thing:
it has a similar feel to it, right?
Here's my thing is that I'm wondering if I'm correct or if I'm misquoting here, because there's a possibility I'm doing that, because I remember that from a standalone film of Babylon 5 called Legend of the Rangers, where one of the characters talks about that as Swedish meatballs. And I was trying to remember if I'm confusing it with that, or it actually came up in the book, or if this is the first time that Craig has mentioned sort of this type of idea in his books.
No,
I couldn't remember.
There is always a reference. You're right. There is a reference in the book somewhere. I just can't remember where. But with the same thing as in, like, everyone has the same food type or same habits that it's universally accepted. Like here, we're talking about just tacos here, and it is everyone has their own version of tacos, and at the same time too, Chad actually gives Joe a thumbs up. It's similar to, again, it's one of those universal thing that everyone agrees upon. No, this is exactly what it means, right? So there is some type of reference. I just don't remember where. Please email us if we're completely wrong in this one. But as far as we know, there is some type of reference. And Derek, you could be right. It could be a Babylon 5 thing as well, too. Even Star Trek, even Star Wars has the same thing. So it's
yeah, but getting back to your point, yeah. Though, I think you're correct. There was a lot of revealing going on. There was a lot of twisting the narrative around in this. Chad was definitely part of it. He was sort of the comic relief of it.
Yeah.
But I like that some people had their moments. Like, Bilby had his moment.
Yes.
Of, dude, I'm going to give you the smackdown. You can choose not to. You can talk to me about it. And I love that Bilby had, because Bilby never gets a moment.
No,
this
he
is
doesn't.
Like
his
he moment, doesn't. You know? And I was really happy he got that moment.
But
just talking over the kiddies.
I agree with you 100% because there was a lot of I think we mentioned several times already since the beginning of this book that there's a lot of character development, a lot of character redefining who they are, right? And Bilby is one of them. Oh, he really evolved to just an AI with a surfer twang, and into an AI with a surfer twang wearing a tuxedo hat, I think, with a top hat, and just kicking ass, you know. And it's nice to see that, right? And at the same time too, you see again we had this discussion several times regarding Skippy and his evolution from when they vanished the elders 10 years and a 10-year gap into where we are now. There was a lot of, like, he has self doubt. He had self. He was self-aware that he is not the top chief anymore. He's not the big AI that everyone talked about. And he also said several times as well, too, that I am magnificent. Species are species below me, but species in the same levels he is. He's just a normal guy, right? And for me, reading that, it tells me that there is an evolution of the characters itself. Same thing for Joe. We saw that from chapter one, right? We saw that from everyone else, right? And for the last five chapters, we saw all that combination of just changing who they are into what they are now is magnificent. I really love seeing it, right? Even when Skippy it really admitted. Well, Bilby really told Joe that Skippy wasn't paying attention when he made the material, the exotic material, and it was by accident. And Chad really said the same thing too. It was by accident because the equipment they were using was not calibrated properly, right? And that tells me that everything that Skippy was doing for the past 10 years was just like he was distracted, right? So and that tells me that Skippy is not the Skippy that we are normally seeing, right? And it's just and he realized that, and Joe realized that he was his friend, but at the same time there was some disconnect between him and Skippy. And I think we did mention that several times in our last episode, right? And it was just nice. I think I said that several times, right? It's nice.
Yeah. Well, what I liked also was that is that the way they dealt with Skippy's insecurities and issues was to vaporize a printer.
Yeah. Like... Okay. Here's a little pop cultural for you there, Derek. Do you know where that came from?
Actually, I was trying to remember. Okay. It was in the back of my head. But what you tell me?
Let me smack some knowledge on you there. It actually came from Office Space. There was a scene that they were trying to get the printer to work.
Are you actually because I know Office Space. That was a great movie. But do you really think that that's what it was referring from, where he got the idea for that from?
Yes, because to be honest with you, I actually watched Office Space a couple of weeks ago. And that's the one of the scenes that I look forward to watching, because there's so many times I want to destroy a printer because he ate my paper, or it will not print, or it will not be detected. So I understand where they're coming from. I definitely understand. But yes, it is a pop culture reference from Office Space. If you haven't seen it, please watch it, because it's one of those things that if you grew up in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, you have to watch it.
No. It's just if you work an office job, you have to watch Office Space. Yes. It speaks to you.
It does.
But it really does. I also like when Reed was talking about the toaster and how she asked, "Do you got? You know, sometimes just guys just want to blow stuff up." And she's like, "Yeah, as long as I can press the button that blows up the toaster, no problem." And you know that having a toaster that only like that toasts either burnt or not at all is a very frustrating thing.
It is. That's why if you ever see me in the road or see me everywhere and I'm getting a bagel, I like mine double toasted with butter and cheddar cheese and bacon. So if you see me, feel free to give me that bagel. I'm good to go. But I definitely kind of understand where they're coming from, because the morale in the ship itself was so low that whatever they did was like not going into plan. Right. And remember, Valkyrie is being manned with new crew members that hasn't seen any action like Skippy, Joe, Frey, and what's her name? The other one. Thunderbolt. The captain.
Reed.
Thank you. Those are the only four characters, including the Bellby, and plus the other engineer, only is part of the original crew that's seen action. The rest hasn't. So they do things that they never done before. They consider it as like, oh my gosh, we did something amazing. But the other five are like, done it. Been there, done that, right? And it felt like that they're just struggling to try to keep their awesomeness up and going. So let's talk about Scrandom here.
Oh yeah, I definitely want to talk about Scrandom.
Yeah.
Because through the entire book, I was thinking, I know he's going to play a pivotal role here, but I do not believe he's going to get in bed with the kitties, because he hates the kitties. It's part of his. I didn't know what he was going to do. But as soon as he was saying, I need to stop at two stations and send two different messages, and I was thinking it has to be connected to something. And it threw me a little bit when...
It threw both of us off.
It threw me a little bit when he got onto the other ship and left, because I thought, okay, he's running away again. And so that's supposed to lead us in the direction of the misdirect from betraying everybody. And so for a moment, I was thinking... was it really like that? But I honestly didn't believe it, because he's sketchy. He is. And when the story came out about him getting the information about the radonium, I thought, okay, well, if that happened, then again, why would he sell out everybody for the kitties? It never fit into his personality, right? Yeah, he's sketchy. Yeah, he's going to look after himself. And I thought him not paying the crew was totally uncool. But, you know,
maybe it's the whole thing then. Maybe it's his whole, a whole thing that he's doing to make it seem. So remember, it was, we were in the same boat. We were thinking the same thing, that what is he doing? Why is he doing this? Why did he lose so much money? It becomes one of those characters, those typical characters that they have this twist in their life that's going downhill, but theoretically they are playing the game, right? And he was doing exactly the same. I think he's exactly what he's supposed to do, where he's supposed to be, where he's supposed to be at, right? And for him doing all that sketchy stuff he was doing, not paying his crew, not paying his fees for his bosses and all that stuff, I think there's I think his thinking is like, I'm already in a black, I'm blacklisted already, so might as well keep going and see what, how far I can go. And when he was, like you mentioned, he went to two relay station, board a ship, paid the captain with, I'm presuming, the salary of the crew members, and they went to the kiddies. And after that, then they revealed that he's actually working for Joe. It's sort of like this, the last like 37 chapters of like him doing all the sketchy things, and it finally revealed that it was planted. It makes you think that this guy really he sacrificed his life for the past 10 years or less to have this moment of like, I just gave you the middle finger here, right? So it's kind of, I expected him to do sketchy things, but I did not expect him to play this game this long. Right.
He's a gambler. I mean, obviously that's their thing. What really surprised me though in these two chapters, the last two chapters of the book, is sort of the disconnect where because I was all on board. They were talking about Grumpy. There, you know, Nagatha was in there. Grumpy was talking about Scrandum. You know, they're talking about Scrandum doing the formula, and all of a sudden the chapter switched to the missiles being on strike and the darts not wanting to join a union. And I thought, Craig, is this supposed to be like the comic relief before the end of the book or something? Because it did not fit. I thought, okay, just walk into the last chapter. It felt very disconnected to me. And I thought, okay, Craig, I want cut that little bit out of the book and just jump into the last chapter, because Joe starts the last chapter as Joe's big lie.
I agree with you in that one, because when that bit of a storyline came out, it just came out of the blue. It just literally came out of nowhere. And when I was reading it, I was like, to be honest with you, Derek, I thought I missed two pages. I really thought I missed two pages of the book. Because it literally jumped to that into that section. I'm like, darts? What?
About the dart attacking the kiddies. Okay, fine. I felt like that should have been pulled back further into the book, like a few chapters before, because it makes it sort of irrelevant as soon as the first line in the next chapter is Joe is a big liar. And then you and I, of course, go, of course Joe's lying. Of course Skippy's cheating. Like, this is not a surprise. We just didn't know why. But it's not, I guess my point is that was not really suspenseful to me. And as you say, it was disconnected there, right?
Yeah, I felt like that. Like, I don't want to go too far that saying that this section of the story should be at the beginning or closer, like before all this started. I just want to, I don't know, for me, I'm just being picky now. I just want to see a little bit more intro on it, because like I mentioned before, it felt like it was just, it's like saying, it's like we're having a conversation about cars, next year I switch the subject, hey, let's talk about planes and trains and food right away, and going back to the story again about cars. So it's kind of like, it felt like it was just a cut, right? And after they selected a big chunk of the story, of a couple of paragraphs, cut that paragraph, put it in, put a period before that section right there. So I felt like it was, in my opinion, it's still relevant going into the next chapter, to the last chapter, right? But how they introduce it, how it was introduced, in my opinion, it wasn't very flowing, right? So, again, we're not in his head, we're not his editors or anything like that. We're just saying, well, that I felt like I wish there was another couple more paragraphs explaining what really happened to those darts. Or even a story to say, hey, remember those darts? Yeah, we have four more to go. You know, at least something like that. It gives you an idea of like who. It's like it jogs your memory from the previous books. It's like, yeah, they had darts. It took me a while to remember those darts, by the way, because there was no like, hey, by the way, remember those darts? It was just like those darts.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, exactly. But I want to be fair now, because I was being critical a moment ago. I want to be fair to Craig now, where he comes back in. And the entire book, when they were talking about anybody can make the Rhydonium and anyone can give it, you know, the AI can get it from anyone. During all that time, my thought was, there's no way you can cover the whole galaxy. There's no way you're going to attack everyone. And Joe and Skippy kept on talking about making lists of people to attack and Reed coming up with plans. And I go, this is not how you operate, guys. This is not how you work. You do sketchy stuff, not directly go out and attack everyone. And so when he revealed in the last chapter that that isn't really what they were doing. They were just prepping the space and giving sort of making it look like they were doing that. And they just prepped those four sites or those three sites to be able to poison the well, as it were, so that they were forced into one position. It's very good strategic thinking. And that's what I was hoping for. I didn't figure it out because obviously using the Rhydonium as a source to poison the well is not something we knew about, but I knew something else was coming. So when it came, I really enjoyed it. I was like, okay, all right. I've been confused the entire book because you've been going on for chapters and chapters about this and it didn't make any sense. Now that he's come up back and, you know, Skippy has made the statement about it and notified that they have like spy satellites and there's like 700 or 800 kitty ships around there. Then my next question was, how are you going to deal with that many ships, right?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it was a brilliant strategy in Joe's part and even just the writing itself that there's always a misdirection, right? And you said it several times that there is a massive misdirection regarding what it's like saying, hey, look at my right hand while I'm doing something with my left hand. You know, that's what's happening here. And when that came out, I was like, well, nice. I was distracted from exactly what I was literally thinking the same thing what Joe was thinking. When they said that we have to attack all these people, all the fabricators and all that, it makes sense. We attack that, at least we can eliminate whatever assets that the AI ship has, right? And I completely understand that. But when they said, hey, while you were distracting, we were actually doing this, right? And I was like, okay, I'm okay with that because you got me, because you made me think one way, but you're actually thinking about a different way. And if you finally told me what you're thinking, I was like, well, look at, I have no issues with this whatsoever. Zero issues.
I agree. And I'm going to ask you about this because you were going on about the movie reference there. So, of course, we come to the point where they jump into the middle of the formation and Joe goes, big bada boom. What's that from?
Fifth Elements.
Ah, good man, good man. Yes.
Give me another one.
Big bada boom, big bada boom. Yeah. Because then they pull out the Elder weapons and they start just destroying everyone. And that's kind of cool to see all that go down because really, Earth is still protected by Sentinels and Earth is the only one that has the capability. And since all the other Sentinels are gone, there's not going to be any repercussions for the humans using the Elder weapons, right? Mm-hmm. And so once all the ships have been destroyed and so forth, and including the Elder ship there, I think that it was a good climax to it because but we've had big battles with the kitties before where Joe's barely gotten out, but It's been progressing since then. This is not a big deal anymore. The kitties are not a problem anymore. And so when it was coming time to fight, my thought was, okay, Skippy isn't going to warp space. He isn't going to have, they're not seeding the whole place with bombs, which actually Joe even said they didn't have enough for that. And so when they pulled out the Elder weapons, I kind of slapped my head and go, yeah, right.
Actually, before right. we go that route though, Derek, I do want to discuss about before we go that section of the chapters, Can we talk about Skippy and what happened to him? I think this is a very pinnacle regard before going to that before that battle scene here. Remember, Skippy has always been a very he's going to a midlife crisis. He did amazing things in the past, and those amazing things were amazing. They're like it gave him Skippy the Magnificent title for a reason. And before going to this battle itself, he had, best to describe it, a breakdown. He was telling Joe that I did all these things in the past. Now I can't do it anymore because he lost his mojo. That pinnacle storyline. That's the story for Skippy telling Joe exactly what he's feeling. That tells me that he's evolving again. He's evolving in a way that he knows what his wall is. He's hitting that wall. He lost his mojo. He lost his capability of doing awesome things. Because remember, he is going against an AI that's the same levels as him. Like I mentioned before, if he ending up beating a species below him, he's awesome. Now he's competing against another AI that he is literally, they're quote unquote equal. Let's just say they're both equal here, right? And that tells me that what he's been feeling for the past like 10 chapters, that it felt like he's not contributing, right?
And what you're talking about is him being vulnerable. Because
yes.
It's easy to fight a war when you have overwhelming power and overwhelming ships. Mm-hmm. What really hurts is when you're in a crunch, when you only have a few ships and only have a few moves left, which was sort of what the Merry Band of Pirates have always been about.
Yes.
They only got a few moves. They only got a few ships. And what made that possible was Skippy, and him not being able to do that was really he was losing his part of what made the Merry Band of Pirates. Yes. And that was his existential threat.
And right? I got this feeling that he is holding, it's like, hey, remember, I know we have friends, I do it at the same time. Ever since you started a brand new story, it's like, hey, remember when we did this? Hey, remember when we did that? One time in band camp? It's exactly what he's doing, because he's reminiscing back 10, 15 years, saying, we did this. I did this. Now he's saying,
did you really just...
Yes, I did.
Did you really just say this one time at band camp?
Yes, I did. So now he's saying that, okay, I did all this in the past. Now I have to do it again, but this time I have zero advantage. The only advantage I have is a bunch of meat sacks. Right, and now he's competing against the same level as him, and now he's like saying, okay, now I'm competing against my peers here, like the same equal intelligence capability on all good stuff. Now what can I do to beat this guy? Everything I do, potentially I will lose. My advantage is gone. Now I'm depressed. Now I'm down. I lost my mojo. Right.
Well, it was. But then, of course, at the end of the final battle there, he notes that the Elder ship doesn't have weapons, or at least isn't like shooting at them. And he's like, huh, that's weird. Because they were expecting that. They were expecting to have a dogfight, a brawl with the ship, and it just wasn't doing it for them, right?
Agree. But remember, Skippy already told Joe since Columbus Day, the book one, that he cannot fire a weapon. Someone has to physically press the button because it's against his programming. And going to this battle, he knows that that AI, if he can fire something, this means his ship is not capable of doing, or he has the same restriction as him before, that he cannot press that button. He still can press that button. Compared to Bilby and Nagata, they can press to say, hey, I need to fire this. Go ahead and fire it. Then they'll do it. And in Skippy world, he still can, because there is still the restriction there. He said it several times in his book that there's still restrictions.
Based on what we know about the books, though, is that the rule is that he's not allowed to fire it, but the ship itself, as a part of him, because they connect together, would be able to shoot. So
It took him a while to go around that. Remember, Bilby took a while to go around that.
I'm just correcting the fact that the only exception to that rule is an elder ship, I think. And that's the point. But it brings us back to the point of the ship being destroyed, right?
Yeah, so the battle itself was very interesting. To be honest with you, the battle, again, like I said before, there was a lot of, like, look at my right hand, but I'm doing something in my left hand. And the same thing happened to this, into this battle scene. It was, there was a lot of, like, what can we do to rescue our people on the planet, try to kidnap Chad, right? And at the same time, trying to get that exotic materials that Chad made by accident. How can we get that, rescue everyone, and minimize the and quote unquote destroy the enemy, right? And the end. This is when the darts came into play. The darts was mentioned in chapter 36 in the battles in 37. When chapter 36 mentioned about the darts, it was like the latter part of chapters. Then he went straight to the next chapter. Hey, I lied. Everyone knows they lied. So he went to the spiel of like exactly what happened to the darts, what they're doing with the darts and all that stuff. And now they use the darts to beat up the Max Salt. That was a great battle. No questions asked. That's a great battle. It was great writing. It was a great way to describe something that's supposed to be described. I like it. I think the using those darts was a genius way of eliminating your enemy, right? Without you know, committing too many things in your ship, because remember, it's one against what, 300 ships or something like that, something weird number, not including including the support ships. And it was a great way to top up the battle scenes, right, regarding how they won. Don't you think? Or you want to describe? Okay, you describe, because you started this. You started that thought.
Well, what I meant was is that the battle here ends with the objective of stopping, which is AI-009, which was in the original AI battle, of course. But when we get to the end, and after the battle is done, and they're doing a post-battle assessment, you know, Skippy's like, "Hey, the ship's been destroyed. You know, all the Max Salt ones are mostly destroyed. We pretty much won." And then the question is brought up, well, hey, you could survive the ship blowing up. What about him? And then Skippy goes back over the data and says, oh, no, and looks at it and says, it wasn't an AI. And then you and I are sitting there reading it going, huh? He goes, it was the Outsider. Join us in our next episode where we discuss The Outsider in our final review of Expeditionary Force Aftermath. Thank you for opening the book with us today. Subscribe so you won't miss our next episode. We would love to hear from you. Send us an email at yourbookmarksinfo@gmail.com. Join us again right here where you left off.